Good morning. I'm glad to see all of you all here today. Niecy, I forgot my tea. Tea there. Thank you. How are you today? That's good. You haven't visited much this morning. The date is May 28, 585 BCE, in what is now present-day Turkey. The Medes, an ancient people from present-day Iran, and the Lydians, a kingdom from the south of Turkey, have been fighting for 6 years. The war was at a stalemate. Neither side was really making any progress. And then something happened, according to the Greek historian Herodotus. Said, just as the battle was growing warm, day was of sudden changed into night. The Medes and the Lydians, when they observed the change, ceased fighting and were alike anxious to have terms of peace agreed on. So what was going on? The solar eclipse. That's exactly right. Both sides interpreted this strange phenomenon as a sign that they needed to establish peace. So the daughter of the king of Lydia and the son of the king of the Medes got married to seal the deal. Seeing eclipses as a sign from God is common in our day as it was in their day. The ancient Chinese, for example, believed that when there was a solar eclipse, a dragon or a demon had eaten the sun. So they would try to scare away the demon by making lots of noise, banging on their pots and their drums. And they would yell, trying to coax the sun to come back. And it worked, because the sun came back. Many Christians saw the eclipse here on April the 8th as a sign from God, a sign that judgment was coming because of all the sin that we're committing. Some saw it as a sign of the second coming of Jesus, the rapture. In fact, there was a small, very small, I think, Facebook group that had predicted that 40 days from the eclipse would have marked the time of the rapture, which is a belief that some Christians have, that Jesus is going to come back and Christians, well, their particular brand of Christians, are going to be sucked up into the air. And that was supposed to happen yesterday, so I guess all of us have been left behind. So, yeah, we interpret those things a lot of times as a sign from God. Native Americans, I love this, they see the eclipse and other astronomical things more in a positive way. The example, the Navajo tribe, to them, the eclipse was all about reverence. It was all about a time of reflection and contemplation and meditation. So during the eclipse, the Navajo people would stay inside and they would not eat or drink. And they would just reflect, they would meditate, they would contemplate. Unlike us, who would have parties. My sister sent me a picture of this very thing that she had made, and she had a party. Unfortunately, Denise and I were unable to go to Arkansas to see that, but my younger sister was right there in the path of totality in Russellville, Arkansas. So she served Oreo cookies and moon pies, which would have been a perfect way to celebrate. How many of you traveled to the place where the total eclipse was, totality? A couple of hands back there. So what did you feel when you saw that? What did you experience? Pure peace. Anything else? Awe. Awe. A-W-E. Yeah. Here's what some people experienced. I didn't expect to cry when I saw it. It's breathtaking and moving. It brought tears to my eyes. It was very emotional. I really got choked up. It was overwhelming. Yeah, if you were there in the totality, all you saw were tears and telescopes. It was a moving thing. And those tears came from a sense of awe. There was just something spectacular and quieting about the experience, that people were just moved by that awe. In fact, researchers learned that the people who were in that path of totality were about 2 times more likely when they were talking about the eclipse in their tweets to refer to a sense of awe, to a sense of amazement. And then there were these feelings. It's really fun, this person says, to be united over something so positive and exciting and really kind of out there. It was a moment truly of collective joy. All of us together, people rooting for different sports teams, people who obviously vote for different people as well, but it was a moment of remarkable togetherness. Another person wrote, given the experiences we've had around the country lately, it's good to see everyone coming together and making it work. So there were two emotions that were commonly expressed and experienced. One was awe, and one was a sense of unity and a sense of togetherness. It's almost like a miracle happened for those few minutes. Right now, the country is very much polarized. It's not just a matter of us disagreeing with someone. That's really good. That's healthy to have good disagreements and debates and that kind of a thing. But our polarity is so bad that we just kind of spew hate at each other. There's very little listening going on, and there's practically no empathy whatsoever between the two sides. Congress and candidates for office insult their opponents' appearances instead of debating their public policy and those kinds of things. And these comments about how people look and how people dress and what they look like, just kind of like we've entered a wormhole back to middle school where we're making fun of how people look. But on that Monday of April the 8th, we were reminded that our society can come together. Differences were put aside. No one was joking or judging, rather. The eclipse seemed to bring us together. Awe brought us to tears. A sense of unity brought us together. Awe and unity, awe and togetherness. It's a pretty good combo meal right there. In fact, one leads to the other. From my understanding, it starts with awe, A-W-E. If you grew up in a Christian environment, you learned about, you sung about awe. Back when I was a kid in the Southern Baptist Church, we would sing this song with the lyrics, O Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder. When Denise and I started a non-denominational church in 1994, one of the most popular songs was, Our God is an awesome God. We were immersed in this idea of awe and awesomeness. So we sung about it, we read about it. The Bible is filled with verses that talk about awe, except it uses a different word. For example, I remember learning this as a junior high kid. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. The fear of the Lord was just beat into our heads. And it caused a lot of people in that Christian environment to be traumatized. And there are a lot of adults today who were traumatized as children about always living in the fear of God. And so we were taught in an environment that we were not so much to love God as we were to be afraid of God. My thinking on that, though, is this. And my thinking may not be absolutely right on this. So you study this yourself. But I'm thinking that as we look at that Hebrew word translated fear, we have a tendency to define that word through our eyes, the eyes of the United States of Americans in 2024, instead of looking at that word through the eyes of the Hebrew culture. And if you look at that word through the eyes of the Hebrew culture, yeah, there is a sense of fear, but more at the heart of that Hebrew word is the sense of awe. It's the same feeling that you might have as you look at the Grand Canyon. And there is a fear there because you don't want to fall. But there is more than a fear of that space. There's a sense of awe and grandeur of the Grand Canyon. It's the same feeling you might have when Denise and I were in Chicago listening to, who did we listen to, Nisi? I don't remember. Where's my head? Some guy that I really like. I just love him. In fact, I'm in awe of him, Brian McLaren. And we took some time to go to the Art Museum and Institute there in Chicago, and they had a wonderful display of Van Gogh. And I could not help but stand. And there were probably 100 people in this particular part of the gallery looking at different art. But it just felt like it was me and Vincent right there. And it was just in awe. The beauty of the work, but the meaning behind the work. And it was a spiritual experience that we can have in that moment. So when we see fear, and we see the words like this in Scripture, we look at that word through our own Western eyes. And we think, okay, then God is someone to be afraid of. God is the boogeyman. God is a monster. God is somebody who's going to jump out from behind the wall and scare us. God is a clown, somebody to be scared of. But ever since I can remember, these two clowns say, paintings of children had given me nightmares. But the Hebrew word is so very different. And so we admire and we stand in awe at nature. We stand in awe at art. We stand in awe sometimes of celebrities. Look, Brian McLaren. And sometimes we have a tendency not just to admire a celebrity, but to really just be goofy about a celebrity. It's totally in awe. And we've almost assigned godlike characteristics to some celebrities so that when we see that celebrity eating lunch, it's almost like we act like we've just seen an alligator riding a motorcycle or something. And so we just can't believe that celebrity is actually eating lunch. As this person said, Taylor Swift was eating a piece of chicken with ketchup and seemingly ranch, exclamation point. Taylor Swift is human. She eats chicken just like I do. There is a professor of psychology at the University of California at Berkeley, who has written a book on awe, the science of everyday wonder and how it can transform your life. His name is Dr. Keltner, and he says this: awe is the feeling of being in the presence of something so vast you cannot immediately understand it. The eclipse, the Grand Canyon, Taylor Swift, just in the presence, and you just can't understand it. And this sense of awe, it does something to our spirit. It changes us. It can transform us. A professor of psychology at Johns Hopkins, Sean Goldie, says this: the awe we feel during a total eclipse makes us think outside our sense of self. It makes you more attuned to the things that are outside of you. So my understanding of awe as it relates to astronomical phenomenon like the eclipse is that it will move us in two ways. It moves us away from our ego to something bigger than me. And secondly, it moves me away from my ego. And when I say ego, the way I understand ego, I got from Father Richard Rohr, who says the ego is that part of self that wants significance by itself. Now, there's nothing wrong with wanting to feel significant and important, but the ego says, I don't need God, I don't need anyone else, it's just all about me. And there is something about awe and being in the presence of something that decreases, minimizes, maybe even eradicates that ego, so that we realize it's not all about me, that my significance and my importance and the meaning that I live in life is wrapped up in this universe and is wrapped up in other people. Because that's what awe does. It not just makes me aware that I'm a part of something bigger, it makes me feel connected to other people, that I'm a part of humanity. I'm not alone. I'm not by myself. It puts us in touch with something bigger, and it connects us. Dr. Keltner goes on to say this: it does this by quieting the nagging, nagging, self-critical, overbearing, status-conscious voice of our ego. When we experience all regions of the brain that are associated with the excesses of the ego, including self-criticism, anxiety, and even depression, quiet down. So the eclipse opens us up to things beyond ourselves, and it opens us up to our connection with other people, so that when the sun and moon align, so do we. One study in the 2017 eclipse analyzed all the about 3 million Twitter users as they responded to that eclipse in 2017. And what they found is that during the eclipse, the language on those tweets were all about awe and feeling humble, a sense of humility, and feeling a sense of togetherness with other people. Awe, humility, and unity. The effect of that 2017 eclipse was also seen in the pronouns of people who wrote these tweets in response to that eclipse were twice as likely than other people to use plural pronouns, we and us. So it was almost like they had a sense of connection with other people, that this was a shared experience. Now, the problem with the eclipse is that it was over in 4 minutes and 28 seconds. And after that, everybody just went back and hated each other. And so we're in this series right now of Find Your People. And what I'm wanting us to think about today is this. How do I get out of my ego? How can I take the experience of the eclipse in which we felt connected? I don't want to wait until 2044, August the 23rd, when the next eclipse comes to the United States, to have that feeling. So what do we do? And that's why I want to introduce to you the concept of contemplation and connection. So what is contemplation? In my understanding, contemplation is just the practice of being fully present in my body, in my heart, and in my mind to what is right now. Whatever it is, I am fully engaged with that. I'm fully present. I'm fully aware of that. When you add a spiritual dimension to contemplation, what I understand it to be personally is that spiritually, contemplation is the state of awareness of God's presence in all of us. Now get this, contemplation does not connect us with God. Contemplation gives us an awareness that we're already connected. There is not one person upon the planet, ever, now, or in the future, who is not already connected to God. What needs to happen in my life on a daily basis and yours is to always live in the awareness of that connection. Contemplation doesn't connect us to people. Contemplation makes me aware that we are already connected. We're already one. We're already a part of this thing called humanity. What happened at the eclipse, this sense of unity, this sense of awe, the eclipse didn't cause that. It just made us aware that we were already connected. It made us aware of the reality. So my understanding, and I'm in the process of this, is that the contemplative life can help us live on a daily basis, not have to wait for an eclipse, in a sense of humility and a sense of togetherness and a sense of love for one another. So contemplation is not navel gazing. It's not just quiet meditation. You can practice a contemplative life and a contemplative practice while you're mindfully washing the dishes or you're walking in the park. It's all about finding awe. Finding awe is easy if we just take a moment and wonder. Winnie the Pooh says, don't underestimate the value of doing nothing, of just going along, listening to all the things you can't hear. And not bothering. Winnie the Pooh reminds us all of an important truth, to never lose the wonder. I've once heard a biology professor say that all scientists are really just kids who never grew up. They never stop being curious about the world. Jesus told us this in Matthew. He called a child and had him stand among them and said, "I tell you the truth, unless you turn around and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever then humbles himself like this little child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven." Jesus doesn't say, "I tell you the truth, unless you say the sinner's prayer, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." He never says, "Unless you confess your sins and believe that Jesus died for you on the cross, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven." He says, "Unless you become like this child, humble, full of wonder, always curious." Contemplation, literally, in its etymology, means to see, to observe. So what contemplation has done for me, it has helped me to see people differently. It has helped me to see things differently. It's helped me to see people on the other side of the politics that I am a little differently. My sound just cut out on that, didn't it? I won't talk about politics then. But it's helped me to see people and situations differently. Contemplation means to observe. To observe and to see people through the eyes of a child. To observe and see the world through the eyes of the child. Always curious. Never making a judgment about it necessarily. But always curious about it. To try to understand it a little bit better. Even when there's a person who does such hateful and horrible things. To look at that individual and try to understand why. What's happening in that person's life now? What happened in that person's life before? So that I can understand better. Contemplation has done this, helped me to go on this path. It has opened up the possibility for me. It has opened up the idea for me that people are to be loved and not feared. People are to be loved and not hated. That's what contemplation has helped me learn to discover. Seeing things through the eyes of a child is what this next video is all about. Let's watch this and maybe say a little hopeful prayer and contemplate on what we would be like if we saw the world and saw one another like these two kids see each other. Take a look.
At a time when so many adults seem to focus on our differences, two little girls in Florida just might set us straight. Steve Hartman met them on the road.
Red. Miami preschoolers Gia Sarnicola and Zuri Copeland say they're not best friends.
I know.
As we first reported a couple years ago, they say they're closer than friends. Closer than mere sisters, even. In fact, Gia and Zuri truly believe they're twins.
Oh, yeah.
Ashley and Valencia are their moms.
They will tell you that they are twins, and they have a long list of reasons why to back it up.
To them, what makes a twin?
Similarities.
Look, come here.
For example, the girls say their birthdays are practically the same day, and the obvious physical similarities.
So what am I looking at here?
The same height.
Oh, because you're the same height.
Clearly, twins. Which is why they also insist on matching outfits whenever possible. So far, Ashley and Valencia have indulged them. But they also recognize there is some bitter to this sweet.
You know, you're happy for a few seconds, and then you become sad because they have to grow up. Mm. And then society takes over.
Indeed, society already tried to take over.
Zuri and Gia were at a birthday party when an older kid told them they couldn't be twins because they don't have the same skin color. Gia broke down. But through her tears, she got out this rebuttal. She said, "You don't know what you're talking about. We're twins because we share the same soul."
I just get chill bumps.
Soul?
I was just like thrown by just that word.
Yeah.
Obviously, what Gia was trying to say is that at our core, we are one. Since this story first aired in 2017, America hasn't always followed their lead. But it's important to remember that while all that was going on, so was this. Today, in their minds, they are still twins. Of course, they have their moments, like when Zuri accused Gia of having a boyfriend.
No, why did you say it to me?
Well, but you do.
That didn't go over well at all. But by and large, they are as close as ever, and still an example, just waiting to be followed.
We have a lot to learn, right. and we can learn from children.
And that's really what the twins want for all of us. To push back against the cynics.
Some girls said we're not twins. And we are.
And move on to the more important things in life.
You know what we're going to get today?
What?
We're going to get ice cream!
Steve Hartman.
And you don't.
Oh.
On the road, without ice cream, in Miami.
All right. Before Anisi comes up here for some Q&A time, just tell me what you learned from that and what they said that really touched your heart, if you can remember. One soul. Is there a way that we can actually see that, contemplate that, that think of the person that you really despise the most? Can you share one soul between you? What else spoke to you from that?
Love.
Love. Yep. Total love. Right. Oh. Not letting outside people or, yeah. Yeah, what was that they said? The mom said something about the adults haven't got to them yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even the children have a little bit to learn, don't they? Yeah. Sticking to what they believe in their hearts, regardless of what others say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unless you become like a child, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Unless you understand the one soul, that we are connected. Unless you understand the importance of curiosity instead of judgment, maybe we won't experience the kingdom of heaven.